On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
It's definitely one of the better movie theme tunes, and I think possibly one of the more underrated classic movie theme tunes of the 1980s. Back to the Future, of course, a movie for which the name John DeLorean is somewhat synonymous. John DeLorean, once upon a time, the biggest name in the world of car development, and 40 years ago this year, his cars began rolling off the production line in Northern Ireland. Of course, forever synonymous with Back to the Future, but the cars were seen as cutting-edge design, albeit not performance, perhaps. But opening a production factory in Twinbrook at a time when the North was on the brink of disaster with the hunger strikes and the H-blocks may not have been terribly wise, but nonetheless, there was a logic to it, and Donald Fallon is here in studio to talk us along with it. You were there nodding your head to the theme tune. You're delighted. It's going, this really is an underrated orchestral banger. There's a lot of focus this year on 1981 and some big anniversaries in the North.
Yeah, and look, there's no general agreement from historians, and there never has been, on when the Troubles began. I think in recent years we kind of decided 1969 between us, but there is agreement on one thing. 1981 is a defining year in the conflict. Mm-hmm. It's a year, of course, that witnesses hunger strikers elected to both Westminster and Leinster House. And the abiding memory of many people, and we're not just talking in the North, I mean, people talk about this in suburban Dublin and beyond, the abiding memory of 1981, you know, the endless black flags in the breeze, the kind of feeling of hopelessness and helplessness. But remarkably, 1981 is also the year that the iconic, and it is iconic, Gullwing DeLorean arrives on an industrial estate in West Belfast. And Twinbrook, nonetheless, the home of Bobby Sands, they would begin producing a car that was briefly, I think it's fair to say, very briefly, and that's one of the surprising things about this story when we get into it, just how brief the story of DeLorean is, one of the great status symbols of its day. But as we'll get into as well, that's not to say it was the best car of its day. Very, very far from it.
Certainly all the glittered wasn't gold in that instance. Tell us first of all about John DeLorean himself, a bit of a character who managed to make his way up in that industry.
I think John DeLorean is as good a rise and demise story as you're going to get in human history in any field of life. And Forbes put it very beautifully. They said, John DeLorean reinvented the dream car and then he totaled it. But he's the all-American dream.
That's,
you know,
very
this is what they build America on, stories like this guy, you know, in Ellis Island. The children of immigrant factory workers, raised in a working class community on the east side of Detroit, works at General Motors, then one of the largest companies in the world, and kind of works his way up. I mean, the American dream, that you could join on the shop floor, you know, and work your way right up to the desk. And his biographer says, he wanted to replace those sedate rides with sportier vehicles, machines that embrace the youth culture, more interested in going fast than being cozy. And you have to remember that the motor car, you know, when the car was invented, it had a very basic function, you know, get us from A to B. What it looked like didn't really matter. You know, as Ford said, you can have it in any colour you want,
as long as it's black.
Yeah. But in time, people were concerned about what they looked like. You know, with the rise of the American middle class, the car became a symbol of status. Style and trends came and went. And by the end of the 60s, this guy, John DeLorean, was off from General Motors. And I love his humble brag as he leaves. He says, even at $650,000 a year, if the job is not satisfying, you go to do something else.
Wow.
$650,000.
Well, for him to be able to go, this isn't for me. I'll take my end 1960s salary of $650,000.
Extraordinary.
I'm not going to do the sums now, but that's quite the salary to walk away from.
With inflation, God knows. But yeah, the DeLorean Motor Company then is born in Detroit, 1975. And there's a kind of Elon Musk vibe about DeLorean. He promises an ethical car, sustainable, with the least environmental impact, but the most style. Imagine talking about that stuff in the 70s, when no one was really concerned about those questions. But when you see a DeLorean, it's just stunning. You know, the stainless steel body, the gull wing doors, nothing quite like it. Visually, very, very interesting. But the question was, now he has this car, where are they going to build them?
I like this kind of comparison that you've drawn there with Elon Musk. Another one that jumps out when you just describe it being like that is a little bit like Steve Jobs, kind of minus 20 or 25 years, because he was like, it's not just about the function, it also has to look nice.
Absolutely.
And you think about the very first generation of iMac. But
John DeLorean never hurt my pocket by tweeting nonsense, so I prefer him to Elon Musk.
Well, you need to go and see somebody to talk about that. You really need to let that go for a little while. Looking abroad for the best option in terms of manufacturing, John DeLorean does look to Ireland. And he looks to the Republic, first of all, but doesn't necessarily get on too well.
No. I mean, this is post-Lamassa Ireland. You know, it's all about foreign direct investment and getting that money into the country. And O'Malley's memoir, Desmond O'Malley's brilliant memoir, Conduct on Becoming, talks of John DeLorean kind of almost ending up on our side of the border. Fascinating how quick this all moves. He says the staff of the IDA's Chicago office made contact with DeLorean in January 78, and within weeks, one of the senior executives of DeLorean Motor Company arrived in Ireland. When John DeLorean himself comes over, there's this really bad meeting between him and O'Malley. They have a working lunch at midday, and right before 3 p.m, DeLorean gets up and says, "I have to go. I have a meeting at 4 p.m. in New York City." His private plane's waiting in Dublin Airport, and with the time difference, he'd actually make it. So this was a real snub, wow, you know, to the government of the Republic. Yeah. At least they felt that way. And as he remembers O'Malley, it was a new, novel, expensive thing that needed a lot of things to go right for it. They looked at various sites, one in Limerick in particular. But it is remarkable. We think of Ireland at this time as opening the doors to any and all foreign direct investment. If you want to build a factory in Ireland, we would move anything for you. Mm. But DeLorean was the one that got away.
Northern Ireland, by comparison, has a lot of unique advantages. But there's actually one thing that it does have a little bit in common with the Republic, perhaps even more so, which is loads and loads of government cash to throw at investors.
Yeah, it kind of seems really unusual to be opening a factory in Northern Ireland at this moment in time. You know, it doesn't have a history of making cars, for one thing. But there's a tremendous desire from the British government to get positive news stories about Northern Ireland into the press internationally, that it's not all bombs and grief and struggle. So they put just under $100 million on the table towards financing this project, which is an extraordinary sum of money. And in the same year that he meets O'Malley in Dublin and the meeting goes so badly, October 78, he's attending the groundbreaking ceremony outside Belfast for this new factory in the company of the mayors of Lisburn and Belfast. So they did it in no time. And Twinbrook would soon be producing $25,000 cars for the local.
Okay, and do remind yourself that that's 1978, so a $25,000 car at the time is not really within the realms of affordability for a lot of people, and particularly so the community in which it's being built, because this is one of the poorest communities on the island, which had very little employment prospect other than the likes of his firm popping up.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's a community that is just ravaged by unemployment. I mean, it's where Bobby Sands comes from. Bobby often talks about the poverty of the area in which he grew up in his prison diary. But a contemporary remembered that men who had never worked in their lives were enthusiastically seizing the opportunity they had thought would never come. From the Catholic estate of Twinbrook on one side to the Protestant estate of Seymour Hill on the other, they watched as a small river was diverted and the steel framework began to appear. It must have been just an incredible thing to see on what was basically, you know, a barren wasteland economically.
Yeah. But the project is... Even seeing a river actually being diverted, that an engineering work which is big enough to justify that, they're like, that river's in the way. We'll just get rid of it.
And then you have this constant series of delays, because things like that are not easy to do. And every time there's a delay, John DeLorean kind of successfully shakes down the Thatcher government for more and more money. And then when the first cars do eventually appear, way over schedule, there's massive, massive problems with them. And I think when you look at those cars, they pop up in museums and the like now, you learn a couple of things. One, Ireland has very little history, and the north of Ireland had no history of car production.
Yes. Yeah.
One young man who worked there, he made a very good point in oral history. He said that Twinbrook wasn't Detroit. Most of my co-workers had never owned a car. Made one.
Okay.
And when they ship out the first 250 DeLoreans, 150 are deemed to have issues when they get to America. The best anecdote about them is the door locks. There's a great quote that at an auto show in Cleveland, a spectator was trapped inside a DeLorean for more than an hour until paramedics pried him out. So that wasn't the great advertisement, if you will, for car manufacturing in Northern Ireland.
I'm sort of reminded of that car that Homer Simpson designed, where everyone just kind of looking at it just with their jaws just falling to the floor. Despite the problems with the cars, documented as you just made them there, seemingly though, the anecdotes are still that it was a really good place to work.
Because the workers in Detroit had done so well for themselves and had built up such a very, very strong industry. And that's another tragic story. You know, when you go to Detroit today, that is just gone without trace. Mm. But the conditions in America in car manufacturing were really good, and the workers in Belfast got the same conditions. So, I mean, it was a great place to work.
Yeah.
And it was also a place really that tried to overcome those kind of endless divisions. Protestant Seymour Hill, Catholic Twinbrook, a different gate at either end of the factory for Catholic and Protestant workers. But they did mingle when they were there together.
Yeah, the gates were just for convenience because of where they worked, not a kind of a segregation on the way in.
Absolutely. But then, of course, when things do erupt, and by God they erupt, like absolutely all aspects of life in Ulster, it affects things in the factory. And when the hunger strikes are on, there's a brilliant banner that appears on some of the demonstrations carried by DeLorean workers, which shows one of the iconic cars smashing through a H for the H blocks. And you have to imagine that, you know, HR were not too happy with these kind of things, that the company was being seen as
they'd have to just be renamed as OR.
Absolutely.
If the H had been driven through,
as an employer of Catholics. And when Bobby Sands dies, then a large percentage of the Catholic workers don't show up for work. So there's kind of massive social unrest that's happening in the province, but also right next door in Twinbrook. And DeLorean tries to do what they do best. They try and say, we don't feel safer anymore, and try and shake the government down for more money. But by that point, I think patience is gone in London.
I know it's not a literal image, but I do really enjoy the notion of like literally shaking down the government for money, like picking up Margaret Thatcher by her ankles and seeing what falls out of her handbag by way of stimulus grants. So then as meteoric as the rise of DeLorean is the fall, both of the company, but also of the man who gave it its name.
Yeah, everyone in Belfast and Lisburn remembers this factory, and yet it only lasted for one full calendar year. 1981 was the only full calendar year of production at DeLorean All In. And then in the following year, there's this amazing story where John DeLorean was busted in a sting operation, agreeing to kind of bankroll drug trafficking. Later acquitted on the basis of entrapment, but the damage was done. His reputation was absolutely in the gutter. And, you know, the dream for the workers of Twinbrook was very much over. You might joke, it was kind of back to no future, you know, for people who had finally had the door opened.
I just can't believe that it was that short, because if everyone has this great recollection of what a nice place it was to work, maybe it was because it was such a short-lived thing, but that if there was only one full calendar year where the thing was producing. Of course, you mentioned the joke of back to no future. There was big screen fame for the car, but unfortunately, as far as Twinbrook was concerned, it came way too late.
Yeah, and look, like Doctor Who's phone booth, you know, time travel has always fascinated us. And I think, you know, the DeLorean car might even be above Doctor Who's phone booth when it comes to, you know, iconic time travelling iconography. But when DeLorean himself goes to see the movie Back to the Future and he sees the car and the way they use it as a time travelling machine, he's so moved by it. He writes to the team behind the movie, "Thanks for continuing my dream in such a positive fashion." That's 1985. I mean, that's 3 years after the downfall of the company. But I think it says a lot about the cars that they bought 3 DeLoreans for Back to the Future from a collector. One for stunts, one for regular shots, and one for use with special effects. And they noted that they were, quote, unreliable and often broke down.
Would you regularly make 88 miles an hour in them, I think is the question. But,
you know, by the time the car became such an iconic part of cinema, the factory was gone.
But because it became such an iconic part of cinema, and of course because of just the incredible and innovative design that it was as well, it is now still, despite its unreliability, a cult classic and highly collectible.
Oh, absolutely. And you can visit theme parks in the world and sit in DeLorean cars. I mean, they're much loved. They're highly, highly collectible. You can buy the Playmobil Back to the Future model, complete with little Marty McFly and opening doors. And we all have cars.
I think I sat in one of the vintage car show actually once upon a time. It's only now that you remind me that I think I was there.
They always show up at those shows. They're so beautiful. And we all have those cars.
Because you can't actually drive them to and from because they're so poor.
You might get locked into them. Who knows? Yeah. But I love the Trab, and better known as the Trabby, once described as a spark plug with a roof. We all have these cars in human history that interest us and fascinate us. But I think the great misfortune of Port Twinbrook was that, you know, Back to the Future was on our screens in 1981. Perhaps they'd still be making futuristic looking cars on the edge of Belfast today.
Yeah. A Trabant is the one that you'd want. You'd want a standard issue Berlin government car that never gets you
anywhere. You can drive around. You can rent one and drive around Berlin in them today, which is a really terrifying experience.
It sounds more terrifying than what you can do in Tokyo, which is take part in a Super Mario Kart race around the streets. You can rent out one of their cars. Hopefully, we'll all be back going to the likes of Berlin and renting out deluxe cars and the likes in the meantime. Donald Fallon, as ever, thank you very much. Donald Fallon, author of the Come Here to Me books and the new book, Henrietta Street 1914. And he's the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast.